just step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen.
This is Off Stage and On the Air, performance number 753. I am Lisa Sheps, and I am overjoyed and very happy to have my co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro, back with me.
Hello!
Hello! You are listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live at koop.org. Log on and listen. We'll be right back.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your step right up. Feast your eyes on the wonders of this world. Oh, yeah.
Dear Kitty, it's a new year.
It is Wednesday, January 23rd of 2024, folks. On the show today, we have Austin Rainbow Theater and their show Back to You. And of course, we're going to have lively discussions of the world of theater in Austin, New York, Los Angeles, Boise, Idaho, and Salt Lake City, Utah. Stick with us.
The news is bad and late.
They're always complaining.
Nothing is new. But
okay,
day.
This is not the happiest song.
No, but it kind of feels like how my 2024 started. So I just was like, how ominous.
I'll
and,
tell you,
right on the nose.
Same way. It's like I said, let's, you know, how can we ring in this new year? Let's, you know, let's talk about Anne Frank.
Uplifting.
That was from it's from oh my gosh, I forgot.
Did you write it backwards?
I didn't. It's
it's the Anne Frank.
I didn't. It's the Anne Frank show, but I forgot what it's called. I think it's called
It's a New Year?
No, it's not. It's not written there. I forgot. I blew it. Anyway, let me just tell you, I'm so happy to have you back.
I'm happy to be back with you.
Well, good. And you were traveling and you were having teeth issues. But you're
I was
back.
Traveling, having teeth issues, then everybody in my house got sick. I was trying to run around and take care of them, and is it, you know,
yep,
domino effect, and yeah.
Well, let's introduce the folks that are with us right now, shall we?
Yes!
We're fortunate enough to have back Christopher Pressler. Hi, Christopher.
Hi.
It's like this is the episode of Christopher's, because on the phone, straight from L.A., we have Chris Rivera. Hi, Chris.
Hello.
Oh, good. I'm always, whenever we have someone on the phone, I'm always scared it's that I'm going to say hello and there's not going to be anything there.
Or are they not?
Welcome.
Thank you.
So we're going to chit and chat about stuff. I just need to, on our little script, I have The Color Purple again. First of all, it's in the news again. But second of all, I saw it. Did anybody see The Color Purple?
The movie?
Yep. The new one.
I'm supposed to go see it this week. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it yet, but I heard good things.
Nope.
Nicole? Yeah, I want to see it when I get to Austin, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can because it's here. I actually sat in a movie theater all by myself.
One else was there?
One person showed up right before it started. But what was interesting, and this has nothing to do with anything, I get there and I walk in. I'm 15 minutes early. I walk into the theater and it is pitch black. There's nothing on the screen. And I went back and I said, there's nothing there. And they said, oh, just relax. And so I went and sat there and, you know, right at showtime, the screen came to life, lights came up, but I needed a flashlight to find
my
seat.
Yeah, I was like, but how are you supposed to navigate in the dark?
I know.
And no previews or nothing?
Oh, they happened. Yeah. Previews and ads took 30 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was a little crazy.
They get longer every time.
They do. Well, anyway, here's my thing about Color Purple. First of all, lovely movie. But it has been so long since I saw the original 1985 movie. And then I saw the, 92 Broadway show when it came through here. And have never seen it again. I totally forgot the plot.
Really?
Well, I mean, a little. I mean, I've got the big things of the plot, but some of the specifics,
nuances.
Thank you, Chris. and I rem- I don't remember. I remember it because I've just read about it recently. All the protests about the original movie and play from mostly the black male community about mm-hmm. how poor the black men are portrayed in this. And indeed, they are.
Mm-hmm. You want to hear something ironic?
I do. I love irony.
When I saw the original production on Broadway, sitting next to me was R. Kelly. Yeah, they talk about bad, awful, horrible icons. Yeah, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, but they're actually, it's really, Mister's portrayed really bad, who in this case was portrayed by Coleman Domingo, friend yes. of the show. Harpo, there were some more redeemable points to the way it was portrayed in this movie. And then the father's just terrible. But the other thing that I found interesting, I don't think this changed from book to movie to musical to revived musical to this movie, was Mister's sudden reclamation. Like, he goes from being a really bad person to being...
The aha moment.
A lovely... Yeah, an aha moment. All of a sudden, he was fine, and Seeley lets him in. I'm sorry. That does not happen in the real world. Just saying.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
I did cry. So, the whole time that I'm watching music? The movie, I'm going, I thought... oh, my God. I just forgot her name. Who played Shug Avery?
Taraji P. Henson.
Thank you.
Yeah, Taraji P. Henson. I thought Taraji P. Henson was in this movie, but I don't see her. Mm. Who's playing Shug Avery? Did not recognize her as Taraji P. Henson. And it wasn't until I saw the credits.
And you didn't like her on Annie Live.
No, she did not do good on Annie Live.
No, and so I was wondering how you were going to like her in the movie.
She did well. The performances were all pretty darn good. Played the second girlfriend of Harpo. I forgot the character's name. And she had a very small role, but lovely voices. And what's her name? Who played Effie? Seeley.
I was like, F, you just switched shows.
I did switch shows.
Like Jennifer Hudson? I didn't know she was in that.
Yeah.
We're going back. Switch shows.
She was on the last Broadway revival.
Yeah, she was in the revival.
Well, she played Shug.
Yeah.
She did play Shug.
Oh.
Anyway, I enjoyed it. And that's it. And
it's one of the soundtracks that I just hear the orchestrations and they emotionally pull at me that I just lose my cookies every time. There is something spectacularly special and haunting and so beautiful in the music from this production.
They did.
It's just...
So I laughed because you said lose your cookies after you called.
I know. Well, I was trying not to after we talked about cookie, it came out easier than a bad word.
Cue snare drum.
The post-Christmas cookies are still haunting.
They had some fantasy numbers that I thought were done really, really well. And the music was integrated extremely well.
And they added new music to this.
I think there's a couple new music things. Fantasia Barrino Taylor played Seeley. And
she did it in the original.
She did.
Mm-hmm. I saw her do it when I went back to go see her do it after I went and saw it with the R. Kelly.
And what's her name? Who? Boy.
People, I'd like to say that's the mental library. Someone else has checked out all these words momentarily, so you can't think of them.
She was in. She was in Orange Is the New Black.
Oh, I didn't watch that.
You must.
Oh yeah.
What's her name?
Uzo Aduba.
Oh
no, she was in Orange Is the New Black.
Yeah.
Anyway, she played. she played Harpo's first wife. I can't remember the character's name anymore. Anyway, amazing. Did a really good job. But here's an interesting thing. I've got to find the LaChans.
Danielle Brooks.
Yes.
There. Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Did a great job. And I never know how to pronounce her name. I tried to do it last week. LaChans. LaChance. Anybody can help me with
LaChance. Yeah.
She played Celie in the last version.
Yeah.
And she is
the updated version of the color.
She
purple.
Is. There's an article that she's trying to the 2005 Broadway musical adaptation to get royalties because in the course of rehearsals she added some stuff that ended up going into the lyrics of one of the songs. She's not officially credited with the songs. The composers are, of course, Brenda Russell, Ollie Willis, and Stephen Bray. But she said she was asked, as an actor, what are some of the things that come up for you? And she said, I want to flirt with somebody. I know I got my sister. She can't be with me, but she's still my sister. And I know she loves me and my children. I didn't put it together in the way they did, but my feelings, my emotions, and thoughts about what I was experiencing as an actor embodying Celie, they put in the song. So I'd like to say I helped write the song. So here's my question for us. I think we've talked about this before. In a new piece, an original piece, the actors, of course, play a role in structuring that piece. Mm-hmm. Should they get writing credit for it? Generally speaking,
are you talking about in this instant, or if you're originating
just generally
something
speaking,
originating well, that, something? I think they're two different.
Well, she's
original.
This is an original song. This is a new original song, so they're sort of the same. But yes, I get it. No, let's just say you're originating. So, you know, I just did a show where it was a world premiere, and I'm about to do another show that's a world premiere. Should the actors get writing credit?
I guess it depends if they actually contribute.
I was like, it depends on how much or what and where. Yeah.
You know, like, does what they contribute go into the book going forward? Or
well, one would presume yes.
Then I would say yes.
Yeah, but they don't.
Yeah.
Chris, you want to say something?
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting developmental process because, like, yeah, in the development, you know, you're taking people's feedback and you're talking about, like, okay, so what's going on inside the character? Like, having done a lot of new work, having workshopped a lot of new work, you're asking everyone's feedback in the room, like, where are you right now? And you're asking that question. But I think it's difficult where you draw the line.
Yeah.
And we do need to figure out where the line's drawn. And I don't know the answer of where the line is drawn. Because that is the question you ask. It's like, where are you feeling? What's in your head right now? But when you do take almost word for word, and was it word for word or was it a general idea to make a song?
Yeah,
I don't know. I wasn't in the room.
Yeah, it depends I feel the same way.
Depends a lot on the context, but it's interesting thought. We talked about this and I forgot what the show was where a group of actors were...
And they are getting the rights and credits for it. Wasn't it something that we talked about?
We did talk about it. It was a question, but I've done a lot of new work as Chris has done as well. And the actors, the designers, the assistant directors, the director, all those people help craft the piece, and make substantial contributions to the piece. But typically it's the writers that get the credit. And I don't really know. I think it's an interesting thought experiment.
Can we come back to this in the second half of this interview?
When we talk about your show, which is an original piece coming to the city?
Yes.
Yes, we will.
Bring this back there. Thank you.
We will. I talked last week about Jesse Green's review of... darn it, I forgot the name of it again. What's the Associated? Nope.
Oh, the Sarah Paulson.
Yes.
Oh my God, now you just made me forget the word.
I'll get it
right
here.
Yeah, it's an A word. Appropriate?
Appropriate, yeah. So he changed his mind. He saw it off Broadway. He hated it. And he gave it a critic's pick rave when it opened on Broadway. And and I talked about this again, so I'm not going to go really heavy into it, but Jesse Green, who's not my favorite critic, had some real self... Mm-hmm. He really looked inward to figure out what it was that changed, and it wasn't the piece. It was him.
It was him, yeah.
Yeah, and so there's another...
Isn't that interesting?
He wrote another article from the New York Times. It's called For a Times Credit on Deadline, a Dramatic Reversal, and he just talks about his process and... and what it was. I just think it's an interesting thing. He said in this article, quote, "On the subway home, I tried to sort out why my response was so different. I pondered the excellent direction, the powerful design, and the blistering cast led by Sarah Paulson. The next morning, I read the 2023 script in tandem with the one from 2014. And though Jacob Jenkins had made what seemed to be 1,000 improvements in the dramatic structure, the story remained what it was. In my rave review on December 18th, abandoning the pretense of critical inerrancy, I concluded that the real alteration was not inappropriate, but in me." So good for him.
But sometimes, and I'm not, sometimes you do see something but when it transfers and it has changed and you didn't like it before and do like it, or you did like it before and then you don't like it. Yeah. So, I mean, like, well, but I love that he had this moment.
You're right. But
like,
it's rarely a 180 degree reversal. It's rarely I hate it to I love it.
It happens.
To me, though, good theater criticism is taking your personal feelings completely out of the equation and just analyzing it objectively. As much as you can analyze art objectively, which is its own conversation.
but I would argue that you really can't do that as a review, as a critic. They are writing about how they felt about that thing in any criticism. So you and I might go see the same show and have very different views.
Right.
I can't write about that objectively unless I'm one of those critics that just makes this is what the show is about and doesn't state an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Which drives me a little crazy.
You know, sometimes I'll go see a show and I'm like, that was totally not my cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
Don't need to go see that again. But I will leave going, holy bananas, that was a fantastic show. But at the same time, I'm going, don't need to see that again.
Yeah,
I can separate that.
You can analyze the quality of a show without putting your personal taste into it, I think. I think those are two separate.
I'm gonna respectfully disagree. Chris, break the tie.
He agrees with Nicole.
I actually had to look up who did review the review of The Life that I really hated, and one thing where separating it where I thought it was a really unprofessional review. They said Ladisi was getting a standing ovation every night, and they said, oh well, Lilias White, who I do love and think is everything, the only comment about Lidisi was she's good, but Lilias White remains the definitive version. And I was like, how can you say that when this woman is getting a standing ovation every night? Would you say that if any white actress was getting a standing ovation every night, would you dare? Would you just dare to someone getting a standing ovation and not at the end of an act, in the middle of a show, getting a standing ovation?
Yeah, that's also the difference. And in my opinion, that is exactly, if I'm a critic and I'm reviewing a show, I review that show. It has nothing to do
with the people,
with anybody that's done it in the past or in the future for that matter. So totally agree.
Unless someone so good that you've never liked the show, and then you finally go and see it, and someone's so good they've changed your whole view on a show, like Patina Miller did for me for Pippin.
Yeah.
Because I just have never liked it. The music, but I just think the show was too long, buddy. Find yourself.
Yeah. Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, I think you admit your biases in a review. Like, if you
sure.
I think this reviewer didn't like the new funk arrangements in the encores. So just admit you don't like funk. Don't say these arrangements are
I think
trash.
George
just
Clinton
say,
is going to be okay with that.
You know, but that's all. I think admit your biases and then say, hey, you know, for me, because of this, and then your review is at least a professional, honest review.
Agreed. I think we solved that one.
Dentist, solving the problems of the world here today.
So there is a off-Broadway production of a show called Christine Jorgensen. I think it's called Christine Jorgensen. It's a Christine Jorgensen show. It's a new musical about Christine Jorgensen, who...
I was like, is it about said Christine Jorgensen?
In this article, it says America's first transgender celebrity. I would argue with that. It's an interesting show. It's written by Donald Stephen Olson and directed by Michael Barivka and Zoe Adams. At 59 East 59, starts previews on February 8th, opens February 14th, and plays through March 3rd. What's interesting is it's a different show. I'm just reporting about this show. It stars Jesse James Keitel, who's from Queer Folk. I didn't know that person. And Mark Nadler. They say he's a gay artist. He's cited Danny Kaye, Mahalia Jackson, Jimmy Durante, and the Marx Brothers, and Bugs Bunny is his inspiration.
That is an eclectic, wild combo.
Yes.
And kind of fantastic when you think of all of them in like one dynamic.
Yep. So it's got a book and original songs by Donald Stephen Olson, and it is called The Christine Jorgensen Show. So that's interesting. It sounds like something I would want to go
see.
So what was the thing I was going to talk about? Because we're running out of time.
I know you've been skipping around.
I can't find it. There is an article you can see at offstageonair.com when we post the show. It's New York Times critics looking forward at what they're looking for 2024. And it's not just theater critics. It's movie critics, visual arts critics, and things like that.
The peeps.
Yeah. There it is. This is an interesting show that I had never heard of before.
Yeah, a lot of stuff got pushed back, too, because of the strike. So everything's now, like, going to come in a barrage.
The show is called My Son's Queer, But What Can You Do?
The title makes me go, what?
I know. It's a one-person show that I had not heard about. It's
really?
Opening. I had not heard about it.
I saw the ads for it. Immediately, it must be a reference to the Les Mis lyric, right?
I have no idea, but that's what I giggled about too, because right. I was all like, huh?
But it's a solo performance done right by Rob Madge, who I also didn't know. It's going to play a 16-week run at the Lyceum.
It was a good amount of time, I remember, when I saw the article. 16 weeks is hardy.
Yeah, for one person.
I do know a thing or two about this show, but I can't say why.
Oh. No, nobody listens to my show, so go ahead and tell us.
It might be obvious who, but I may have put someone on tape for this show and then seen sides and done a little research.
Got it.
In the last maybe 72 hours. Who would that be? What actor am I around right now? Let's continue.
Okay. Well, they're doing an interesting lottery that's not been done before. So most lottery ticket purchases happen like right before the show, like a couple days before the show, you join the lottery. And if you get win, they are doing it now, January 2nd through January 7th. You can enter a lottery for $25 tickets that will be good between February 27th and March 11th. So you can go on, get a lottery. And if you get your ticket, you have a couple months to figure out how you're going to get it to New York. Because typically, lotteries for Broadway shows have really favored people that live in the tri-state area. So people that can easily get to New York at a moment's notice. And I think that's kind of interesting.
Well, I mean, you can't get upset with them with that. The people that can get there at the moment's notice are the people that are helping to keep it going because
they're there. I'm not. But
no,
still.
Just nice that it's open in a.
So the producers, who are Tom Smedes and Heather Shields, said this groundbreaking approach is more than just a ticketing strategy. It's a reflection of our commitment to making theater accessible and fostering a diverse audience. So
that's cool beans.
Love that. It is directed by Luke Shepherd, who directed Anne Juliet, and it premiered in London at the Turbine Theatre.
In London?
In London.
You haven't given me stepping time.
Yep. Because I'm turning over a new leaf.
Oh.
All right. Finally, Little Shop, another cast change.
Production is so good.
We can talk briefly about this, but we've got Darren Criss and...
don't need to go see him.
Yeah, well, you saw him in...
I'd be a little interested in, but Evan Rachel Wood.
And Evan Rachel Wood. are taking over for the roles.
But it's a charming, charming production.
Yes, everybody's saying good things about it. But here's everything I listen to keeps talking about the character of Seymour and hiring good-looking people to play it instead of schlubs. The character is a schlub. And everybody goes to Rick Moranis, who did the film. How do y'all feel about that? I personally don't have a problem with...
It didn't either way.
With good-looking actor playing that role.
Listen, Gideon Glick is a good-looking guy, yep. And he looked dorkalicious on another level every way Seymour should. And he was brilliant in it, so...
I agree.
The sexy nerd trope.
I did see... I took my mom to go see Gideon Glick and Christian Borle. We sat in the front row, and it's
just
a small...
Did you just ignore everybody else?
I did right this moment, yeah.
Okay.
And because those were really about for. Although Tammy was good. But they were doing the dentist and the whole mask and the prop went flying everywhere and into the audience and it fell in my mom's lap and she's like, I'm throwing it back on the stage. I was like, go for it, Liz.
There you go.
And Christian Borle caught it from her and she was so excited. I was like, see the little things in life.
I love me some Christian Borle.
But it's a great, intimate production.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to talk about the upcoming show. Back to you. And let's listen to a little doo-wah.
Okay.
You remember that total eclipse of the sun a couple of weeks ago?
Okay, we are back. You are listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa and Nicole. And we've got Chris Squared here.
I was about to say, Chris Squared.
Christopher Pressler and Chris Rivera. Hello.
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 Okay. Well, let's get to why y'all are here, why we're really going to talk to y'all. So Austin Rainbow Theater is bringing Chris's show Back to You to Austin. So, Chris, you wrote this, yes?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Thanks for being on the show.
Can I have a segue from the last segment to this one?
Well, you're the writer. Go for it.
Okay. So I do want to say, if people see my photo and think I'm good looking, I was 120 pounds when I played Seymour. So I was at least a string bean when I played Seymour against Noelle Wells, who was the lead in the female lead in the first season of Master of None and had one season on SNL. So, moving on. I wrote the show.
It's so fun. We were talking about that during the break.
Yeah. I was fortunate.
Oh, I wrote my show. I didn't write Little Shop.
Oh, you didn't.
I'm glad we cleared that up.
Tell us about your show, which is entitled Back to You.
Yes. Back to You is about a 15-year relationship between two young Latino people who grew up in the Valley of Texas. And the first half of the show takes place in the Valley when they're teens. They kind of go their separate ways, but they keep in touch. And it's about 15 years of being close to someone, not being able to forget them, and never being able to quite get it right. Two imperfect people, imperfect world, imperfect relationship.
Yeah, and when I look at the trailer that I saw and look at some of the stuff around it, they sort of fade into their romantic relationship. Is that accurate?
At the beginning, yeah. At the beginning, it's they figure things out in high school, and then but they do age 15 years. So
in the course of the play, they age 15 years?
Yes.
Oh my.
Yeah, they start 15 and around 30, yeah.
Okay, That's what I did this morning. It's incredible.
Lisa.
I know, it's funny. So this takes place in Texas, and you have a...
The first half.
The first half. Now, you live in New York, correct?
I do. I grew up in Texas, but I live in New York
okay.
now.
Okay, did you grow up in... you I have a Houston character. Connection I saw on your resume.
Yes. After growing up in a small town, I lived in Houston for a very long time.
So did Lisa and I for a while.
But like a lot of my adult life.
Yeah.
Oh, you do.
Well, that is amazing. Christopher, you are the artistic director of Austin Rainbow Theater. Why bring this show here?
So there was really two reasons behind it. One is because I've known Chris as a friend for quite a few years, and I had the opportunity to see one of the early readings of this play and was mm-hmm. initially just blown away by it. And I said, you know, we really have to bring this down. But at the time, Austin Rainbow Theater wasn't really fully formed yet, and we didn't have the means to do it justice. Sure. So now we have the means to do it justice. And number two, it's just where we specifically this season with Austin Rainbow Theater, we're trying to focus on stuff that has more of a resonance with not only queer people, but with queer people in Texas, especially with everything mm-hmm. going on right now with, you know, all the horrible stuff that was going on in the legislature and yada, yada, yada. We wanted to really just feature queer Texas stories. And so yeah. this play was just
QTSs,
perfect.
We call those.
Exactly.
QTSs.
Yeah. Coin that.
I did.
She is a lot of animals.
So, Chris Rivera, you've had this. This will be your second production, full production, or is this? We're basically moving the production that you had in New York. We're moving it here to Austin, correct?
Basically, yes. Although we have some great designers that are upping the ante. It was on set and lighting here. We have some beautiful things that were not featured in the production in New York that I'm very excited about. But yes, as far as the blocking, the projections, and, you know, the actors, yeah. we're shipping them over New York.
So speaking of the actors, you're one of them, are you not?
Yes, I am.
And you're also directing?
Yeah, I mean, me and Joe, we didn't credit, I don't even know if I credited myself as the director, because and Joe Montoya... Oh, I am. I am. But in the original production, I don't know if I credit myself. Oh,
okay.
I did direct. Me and Joe have worked together for a long time.
And that's Joe Montoya,
on everything.
Who's the other actor in this?
Yes. But we had a long time to work on this together. And we were able to create something really great. I mean, we had a stage reading version that was very close to what the production was. So we had months to create this together, so it was great.
Well, that's lovely. How was it received in New York?
Wonderfully. We actually made one Data Blogger's best of list. We were one of only two off Broadway independent shows to do that. The rest were all Broadway and off Broadway productions.
Amazing. It's always important, you know, especially the off Broadway stuff to capture the eye and get out there, because. off Broadway is rather ubiquitous, and it's hard to raise. It's hard to raise to the rise to the top. So congratulations on that.
Yeah,
thank you.
So, is this auto? Is this taken from your own life in any way, shape, or form?
That's a good question.
No. Yeah, actually, I'm open. I emailed the artist note because it's asked so often. I decided to address the audience with that because, you know, I am in it and I've written it. This is my seventh full-length play, and I did not suddenly decide to write an autobiography. Nothing in the show happened to me in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, growing up in Texas and growing up as a queer artist in Texas, a lot of the fears, a lot of the concerns, a lot of the thoughts, the feelings that both characters go through in this are very much real and personal, but none of the events are from my life.
Got it.
The relationship that these two people go through, everyone who will see everyone straight or gay by whatever who's dated before, probably if you've dated more than one people, you've probably dated a Manny or a Diego. I won't say more than that. But
I dated a guy named Manny Diego.
There you go.
You probably dated
one of these.
Choking on my own saliva laughing here.
You probably dated one of these guys before. You'll figure out what I mean. If you know about attachment style, any of you listeners, that's what it's based on. Without teaching you anything too much about it. But it's going to resonate with a lot of people. Interestingly, I'm more like the character that I don't play.
Got it. So I understand that some of the design aspects have changed. Has there been any other changes with text or dialogue from New York to what you're going to produce here?
I think there probably will be a word here or a word there just as we sink back into it. And we're like, you know what? Like we were talking about in the last segment, there's often with me, it's just like, you know, this feels better. Yeah, do it.
Yep.
You know, as we're going along. If I can return to that for a minute.
Yeah,
I think,
do it.
Something that came up and we were emailing about is in a previous production, I had credited Joe Montoya, the actor coming with me, as dramaturg for this, because when it came to attachment styles, I wanted to check in that everything that my character, Diego, was saying felt truthful to him, even though he wasn't playing that role. And I wanted to credit him in the program this time around, too, but he didn't want that because he didn't want people asking him about it and having to explain what it was.
Right.
And he doesn't, you know, want a writing credit or anything like that. But I did, you know, definitely ask him for help and make sure that things were the truth.
Sure.
And felt real. And he certainly, like all of my actors, I when we're doing a development, if they say, this, can I say it this way, or this feels funny, I definitely want them to say it the way that I'm not too precious.
Of course.
I want it to feel right coming out of the mouth. If there's a better way to say it that way, you know.
So the Christopher, the when Chris was alluding to lighting design and scenic design, those are they coming from Austin? Is that Austin Rainbow Theaters?
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Our technical director, Lucinda Culver, is designing the lighting, mm-hmm. and Katie Burks-Kilman, who designed the set for our previous production of Sorted Lives, is our set designer for this production as well.
Well, that's great.
That is cool.
And can you give us a little hint about what that's going to look like?
Ooh. Depends on how much we want to give away. Chris, what do you think?
You know what? You do it. You're producer. You're selling this show, so it's all up to you.
I will say that there's something very poetic, in the design of this show, mm-hmm. A sort of, naturalism versus urbanism that is very reflective mm-hmm. on stage, and maybe leave it at that.
Okay. Well, mm-hmm. cool. We're looking forward to seeing it. So, Chris, just out of curiosity, I mean, I know it's going to be a big hit here in Austin. What plans have you for this show? What's your wish list? What would you like
to look into the future crystal ball, aren't you?
Well, you know, I'm excited to have its first tour outside of New York. I'd love to. It's definitely a very mobile show. I'd love to do it elsewhere, too. And also, I have been asked to create a screenplay adaptation by Original Cinematic.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's cool.
Oh, yeah. And thank you. I've worked with them before. I've acted with them a couple of times. And they saw the show and really loved it and think it would be a great film. So hopefully I can write it and complete it while I still look young enough to star in it.
There you go. Which is important. But, you know, you could get Darren Criss to do it for you.
There you go.
So you're in LA right now, but you're a New Yorker. Are you doing a project in LA?
No, I'm here. I was here. You know, I just wintered as a verb. No, I had a little holiday celebration with some people and just took a couple meetings here and coming straight to Austin from here.
Well, lovely. Chris or Christopher, is there anything else about the show that you want to highlight on the air right now?
What do you think, Playwright?
I'll give that to you. I'll give that to you as the producer that's selling it.
I mean, the main thing that I think our board was very excited about, as our board at Austin Rainbow Theater is actually majority Latina, is that this is a queer Latina story.
Mm.
And you don't see many queer Latina stories in theater nowadays.
No, you do not.
No.
You know, so that's something that is, I think, is really going to resonate here in Austin. So
wonderful. That's cool. So you are playing at Ground. Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, I was also just going to briefly say, like, I think what resonated with a lot of people in New York, even if they weren't from Texas, is that if you're not from a bigger city, if you didn't grow up here, it's a safe show, nothing violent or nothing. People don't die by the end of it. There's only two of us, so it'd be really awkward if we did. But the fear and having to worry about your survival as a queer person in a small town is something that's really real in the first half of the show. Sure. And unfortunately can be a hindrance to your love story early in your life. And it's not, you know, I think the show is also, it's really fun and funny and sweet. It's not like a terrible, horrible drama. And there's so much queer joy in it. And that's what I really like about it and what resonated with a lot of people.
I love the idea of queer joy. That makes me very happy. So this is going to be playing at Ground Floor Theater. When do you open?
January 12th.
January 12th. When do you close?
January 20th.
And where can folks go to get more information?
AustinRainbowTheater.org.
Okay. And is this, do I want to bring the kiddos to this one?
What's the age? What's that rating?
Are we PG-13?
No, yeah,
we all said that at the same time.
Even.
Okay.
Preteens. I don't think nothing would offend a preteen. Like, nothing, if they're watching TV, nothing is going to offend a preteen.
Well, lovely.
Because like, we don't get down and dirty or anything.
You go. Make your own rating.
Wonderful. Yeah. Well, thank y'all for being on the show. I look forward to seeing it, and I'm very, very soon.
Very excited.
Thanks for having us.
And Chris, have very safe travels.
Thank you so much.
Yes, enjoy your time on vacation.
Okay.
Thank you.
We're going to play this from Zombie Prom. Makes complete sense. But it's about forbidden love. And so that's where I went. We'll be right back.
My forbidden love.
We are back. You are listening to Offstage and on the Air with Lisa and Nicole.
Hello, and our friend.
And we still have Christopher and Chris here with us. Chris, you still there?
I am. Also, it's really funny because the sound coming through the phone, like listening in, I thought Christopher was singing.
Maybe he was.
I wish that was my voice.
Maybe he was.
So here we're going to talk about...
We're so fancy here. We have special effects to do all that.
We do. Let's talk about some of the stuff that's going on local. It's very light locally right now. Not a lot of stuff is going on.
But it's about to ramp up.
But I think it's very interesting. I saw on the TV today, Ballet Afrique is doing a Nutcracker that's all black dancers.
Yep.
One performance only. At the Paramount, and you get information. It's on the 6th, which is this Saturday, I think.
It is.
And you get information at austintheater.org, and that just looks really interesting to
me. Yeah, I don't think they've been here for, probably it's been like 4 years or so.
Well, Ballet Afrique is a local company.
Are they?
Yep, they're local. Yep, we were talking to them about doing a production of The Wiz not all that long ago.
Okay, that makes me even more excited to know that they were...
Yeah, they're local. And
I just thought they were not far away, but still. Okay. No,
they are Austin, Texas.
Well, hello. I fell off the turnip truck.
other things playing now, we talked about, I don't have no idea how to pronounce this, Theli Magic at the Vortex.
Oh, it's the Bowie one.
It's the Bowie one.
Yeah.
It is a one night only on the 5th.
That's Friday.
And then that's Friday. Yep. And then I'm very excited about this.
And that's at the Vortex. We didn't say where
it is. But I'll say it again.
I got all excited at the Vortex. About Bowie.
I didn't tell you.
I saw David Bowie at a private concert and met him.
I don't know what
to
say.
And that was a very exciting moment in my life.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Well, to share that because you don't get to share it often. And it was really epic.
I would share it all the time. But it looks like fun. It's David Bowie. It's got drag queens. It's got magic. It's got everything you
want. It's Bowie. Yeah.
It's Bowie. Why am I not hearing you very well? Say something.
Hello.
There you are. Okay. Good.
Hello.
I'm very excited. Next week, the Broadway in Austin has got the Tina Turner musical.
This one's a good one.
Yep.
Another movie. Oh, I'm so bummed I'm missing
it. It's playing the 9th, the 14th. I will be there the night of the 9th.
It is. It's the Texas premiere. She's in Houston right now, and then she goes to Austin, then San Antonio, then the Dallas, and then the Fort Worth. It's a shared role in the tour, and it is Ari Gruber and Paris Lewis.
Okay. I don't know either of those people, but I want Paris Lewis's name.
It's Paris with two R's also. Oh, that's even better. P-A-R-R-I-S. Mm-hmm.
That's even better.
And Gigi Lewis, who's playing Aileen, Tina's sister, is a Texan there too.
Oh, very good.
Mm-hmm. Tying it all together for you. Oh, it's such a good show.
Then there's a couple of single performance. Well, a lot of these are single performance, but Cenicientia, I know I'm mispronouncing that.
No, you're pretty good.
Glass Half Full is happening
it's
on the 6th.
It's a wonderful little production.
It is beautiful. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure I saw it. I thought it might have been done at Ground Floor, but I'm not. I don't remember. It's playing at the Dougherty on the 6th. Gilbert and Sullivan is doing a Gilbert and Sullivan Christmas Carol.
I know. I find this fascinating.
And I wish... Oh, wait. I think maybe I have it on my computer. There were some fun things in it, giving Christmas Carol the Gilbert and Sullivan treatment. And I'm just going to see if I can find it real quick. I can't. But it looks interesting, and it is playing at St. Matthew's Church, Episcopal Church, on the 7th, which is a Saturday.
Oh, that's a Sunday. Discussed.
It's a Sunday. Never
mind. 7th is a Sunday.
Yes, true. That's what I meant to say. Mm-hmm. And then finally, Trinity Street Theater, Adrian Daw's new play has got a reading. It's called Harry and Sherry.
It's fun to say.
And it is fun to say. And Harry is spelled H-A-I-R-Y, not H-A-R-R-Y.
Yep.
Harry and Sherry.
It's Sherry's with an I.
It is, with two R's and an I. Mm-hmm. It's at Trinity Street. You've got a great memory. It's at Trinity Street, also on the 7th, which is a Sunday, as we've just decided. For more information, you can go to trinityplayers.org.com, one of those, or just Google Trinity Players, or go to atxtheater.org. You can find it there. How about today in theater history? It's pretty slow.
In theater history, yep. Stuff happened.
Stuff happened.
Tell us, Lisa.
So we have some birthdays.
Bon anniversaire.
Kate Levering.
Kate.
Telly Leung.
Oh.
And Justin Paul.
Oh.
And then you'll remember this from 1938.
That was a cold year.
Time in the Conways opened at the Ritz Theater. And Pal Joey opened in 1952. And guess what? The 1952 Pal Joey... Revival.
I was like, the revival?
It was a revival.
Yeah.
And
just revived recently.
It's been done several times. Mm-hmm. The latest was in 2008.
Well, they just did that reading.
Oh, they also did the...
with the Sabian Glover and Tony Goldman.
Yes,
did that.
At City Center Encores.
I think so.
Yep. Interesting. It's a show that...
music in it is.
Songs like Bewitched, Bothered, and Bewildered came from... this is Roger and Hart. It's very interesting. The music is by Richard Rodgers. And the 1940 production, which is when it started, then it had a 1952 revival. You know, my mind, when I hear 1952, I don't think revivals.
No, but I mean, it's 12 years later. It really is. I know.
Oh,
but
it is definitely a revival. But
I know.
Somehow
what
my
are you
mind,
reviving? I know. Yeah.
We do need to talk about the sad news about Matthew Redden.
Oh, yeah.
Who mysteriously passed away on New Year's Day.
Big loss.
Yeah, big loss to the Austin theater community.
Big, big heart. Big, big talent. Really good person. I'm going to get really upset. This one has really rocked my world, but I know it's rocked this community's world. And, you know, he's recently moved to Michigan. It's rocked the Michigan world also. Just a talent and a really special person that always brought joy. Everybody was one of those people that everybody always has the nicest things to say about. And he took the time to ask you questions and care and be there and say hello at those moments. Yeah. And
Stalwart in the Austin theater community and
41, too young.
Yeah, and also the real estate community. He was a realtor. Mm-hmm. Well, rest in peace, Matthew Redden, and we'll take a little break. We'll listen to You Mustn't Kick It Around from Pal Joey. We'll be right back.
I have the worst apprehension.
All right, we just wanted a little taste of that. We are back already.
You made me. I was dancing back.
Yeah, I know you were. You're doing good. It sounds like a lot of fun. So I had to make sure that this is something that I tried to talk about for the past 3 weeks and have been unable to. We have ended the show with music from this thing, from this album, every week, but I haven't been able to spend any time to talk about it. So I want to take a moment to talk about...
Tell me.
It's a studio album performed by Broadway singers, and it is called... it's called Well-Behaved Women. Mm-hmm. It is a whole bunch of numbers, and it talks about different... famous women in the world. I'll just run through a few of them. Eve, Harriet Tubman, Cleopatra.
I think we touched like 1 second Janet on this Armstrong. When they
well, we talked
it.
About the Supreme Court, which is Sandra Day O'Connor, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Sonia Sotomayor. So some of the other people that are singing it, Laura Benanti mm-hmm. sings about Eve. Chris, like, have you heard of this? Have you heard of this album? Oh, he may
I
be gone.
Hadn't.
Oh, he's there.
Oh, he's there.
You haven't. Well, good.
Oh, I'm here, but I hadn't heard of it. I know Drag Race basically did this concept for that All Stars too.
They did. I laughed at that when I saw this. I was like, someone took this idea, but.
But I love it.
Yeah.
Like much better.
Lachanze sings about Harriet Tubman, Liz Callaway, Lindsay Mendez. We played her. She does Frida Kahlo. Lauren Patton. So it seems like a really cool thing. I'm just going to read this little blurb that I pulled from the website. What would Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Harriet Tubman, Frida Kahlo, and Malala I can't pronounce her last name, sound like if you heard them sing? Find out in Well-Behaved Women, a new collection of songs by Camel Dean, who is a Broadway musical director, arranger, and composer of the award-winning off-Broadway musical Renaissance. These women and more will be brought to life by some of Broadway's leading ladies, and through these powerful and often hilarious songs, we'll celebrate ways in which their bad, bleeped behavior helped them make history.
Dun, dun,
I bleeped myself.
You bleeped yourself.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was just really excited to be able to talk about it finally and let people hear. We're going to play. We're going to go
Which
out.
Which little ditty did you choose for the end?
Well, I'm going to play.
I will be streaming.
Pardon me?
I will be streaming.
Oh,
be
good. Streaming. We're going to play. Where'd it go? Hold on. It's in here somewhere. Well, I'll read it from here.
If I had a sister? If Shakespeare had a sister?
If Shakespeare had a sister, it's sung by Bonnie Milligan.
Oh, Virginia Woolf.
And it's about Virginia Woolf.
Oh, but you have two here.
Well, I have two in case I needed to play, in case I wanted to play a second one, but we're not going to have time to play a second one.
Felt that Virginia was more important than Eleanor, huh?
No, actually, I had it the other way around, but Virginia, the song is longer. and so that's why I chose it.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah, so that's why it has been chosen.
I'm going to send Eleanor Roosevelt to go have a bone to pick with you.
Yeah, we're going to end with that. If Shakespeare had a sister. Chris, thank you for joining us all the way from
you.
Los Angeles.
Thank you.
And Christopher, thank you for joining us all the way from wherever you came
yes,
from.
Indeed-y.
Yeah, thank you.
And remind folks one more time where they can get information about your show.
AustinRainbowTheater.org. Theater with an R-E because we're cultured.
Yeah.
That's what our listeners know. It's the right way.
All right. We're going to stand by for Austin Common Radio Hour, which is part of the Austin Cooperative Hour with our friend John Hoffner. He's there here right now trying to bully the microphone away from me. And I
he
say
likes
no.
He to do that.
Keeps trying to do that, but I'm not going to let him until I say we will see you next week when we look at what's happening off stage and on the air. Bye, folks.
Ciao.
If Shakespeare had a sister called Judith, say, with nothing but writing to fill her days, imagine the canon we'd have today if Judith Shakespeare got to write her play.